So Eric isn't here today, so maybe one of our volunteers take some notes. All right. I'll keep my mouth shut. I'll put this here for us for reference, but all right, well, we'll go ahead and call the thing to order then. Looks like I've got, we'll call it 6:12 in time. And we'll do roll call. Start with members on the phone since we can't see you in person. Just want to say we got mine. I think we got Paul and Ike.
I'm here.
All right. You got anybody else on the line that's a member?
Alex is here.
I think here we go. We just got Alex connected, Alan. So.
All right. Hey, look at there. All right, I'll just go around the table who we got here, and we'll assume everybody else is either used or gone. So I'll start on my left side of the table. And we got here.
Hey.
Alan Mortensen is here. Gives us 7. And gives her 1. With that, we'll go to agenda item we got on the list here, and that's introduction of guests. So I'll go ahead and start with the department.
Tony Hollis, Wildlife Conservation and Fairbanks.
All right, we got any guests on the line? Want to introduce themselves?
Yeah, I guess that would be me, John. Pat Owen. I'm a wildlife biologist with the National Park Service. So that's Alex.
Welcome.
And I'm Sam Decker. I'm with Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I'm the Yukon River Assistant Area Manager for fisheries.
Right. Great. Well, welcome everybody. Looking at the agenda here, it's me, Chair's comments. I guess I skipped that. I already kind of made those at the beginning. Like I said, it's nice to everybody here again. I have on the agenda here for comments and concerns, public. Anybody have anything that's first thing they want to bring up before we kind of roll into meat and potatoes of the meeting here? I'll take those crickets as a no. All right, comments, concerns of any AC members anybody wants to bring up before we get rolling here?
Yeah, this is Paul. Leroy had some concerns he wanted me to pass along, and he was concerned with this weather we're having or have been having with the snow and the ice, that the survival rate of the moose and sheep might be a little low this winter, and he wanted to suggest to the department that some of the, you know, the special hunts like the Eddie Bull and cow hunts and those extra hunts maybe be dialed back or even suspended for this year because of that. Figuring there's might be a large winter kill.
Okay, yeah. I think at some point here we're gonna get an update from Tony. I know I have some questions about some of the populations and the winter and freezing issues as well. So maybe we'll go ahead and just.
Paul, this is Tony. I'll address that exact issue. Okay.
Okay.
Perfect. All right. Any other comments or concerns from any of your members? Nothing. Okay. Next item is to approve the agenda that we currently have. I don't know if everybody has a copy in front of them. Those that are listening in, I guess I can kind of roll through it really quick. Approval of the previous meeting minutes, staff reports, any public comment, going over old business, new business, like the rep for the board-wide meeting, statewide meeting, sorry, set our next meeting date. And so in the new business, I think we're going to be getting an update from Tony and the department. We also need to go through statewide proposals that are coming up. We're kind of a little bit late on a lot of the new proposals that were put into the area that was rolled from the previous year. We pretty much went through a lot of those proposals, but I think there were a few that were added. And we kind of missed commenting on a few of those so that we could meet in person, but there's a lot of the statewide proposals that are applicable to our area that we should definitely start covering. And we also need to discuss elections today. I think a lot of our seats are probably actually expired now. And then we had voted to go ahead and hold out on voting in new elections. During elections until we met in person again or during our previous meetings. So we'll have to kind of figure that out and see where we stand there and talk about maybe for our next meeting. Recommend the elections, but kind of what we've got on the agenda. Anything you want to add or take away? Or
hey, Alan, this is Pat Owen. I didn't hear my name mentioned, but if you guys want a wildlife update from the park, I've got some information to share with you.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. After we kind of go through our previous meeting minutes, maybe we'll fit you in there for during our kind of public comments section, if that's fine with you.
That would be just fine. Thank you.
All right. Great. Any other comments about the agenda? All right. I don't know if everybody's had a chance to look at the meeting minutes from our last meeting, which is actually over a year ago now. I looked at January 12th. I did look through these. They were pretty accurate from what I remember. I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the previous meeting minutes as read. All right. All members in favor of approving the previous meeting minutes?
Here.
Those on the line?
If you work in school, you get benefits. Which? Doctors announced that
they yes.
were last night. That
is yeah, Paul, I got your mind. Is that a yes from you as well?
No, controversial right now.
Yes, for me.
Okay, hey, somebody that's on the phone got a little background noise, if you don't mind muting your phone for a minute there.
Alan, this is Kyle Campbell from Board Support. So I just wanted to, so that was Alex Buto that I just, I muted him from this end. And Alex, if you can still hear us, when you're ready to unmute yourself, regardless of how the mute works on your phone for what you see, you need to press on the dial pad star then six. That'll unmute you in this call so that others can hear you again.
Have you approved the minutes from the previous meeting?
Yes, sorry I'm late.
That's all right.
I have some stuff. If that is an allergy, so he does want
to. Oh, he is online, yep. Yeah. Yeah, we just had that. Go.
All right, so am I unmuted?
We can hear you.
We can hear you now, Alan.
All right. I'm a yes.
Okay, so looks like we've approved our previous meeting minutes. We have staff reports. Is there anything besides game surveys, anything that you wanted to cover before we get to that? Hold off for new business. Okay, that sounds good. All right, so next we got the public comment. And it sounds like we're going to hear from our local park biologist about some updates on numbers in the park. So I'll pass the floor to you.
Thank you, Alan, and greetings, everybody on the committee. Great to hear your voices. I wish I was there to see your faces, but I'll try to make this quick. I know you got a lot to cover tonight, but I thought it might be interesting for you to hear some updates on things that are going on in the park. So I'll just go through a couple of projects that we have going on, updates on a couple of different species. I'll start out with wolves. We do a radio tracking flights and gather information from Iridium GPS collars to monitor den activity and pup productivity for wolves in the park. Currently, the fall estimate for 2021 was 121 wolves in 12 packs, and we actually have one pack that has as many as 22 wolves in it currently. The numbers are up ever so slightly from the 2020 numbers. One just sort of note of interest is during the fall capture, there was a wolf that was observed by one of our fixed wings running with a trap on its foot. That wolf was guarded and the trap was removed. So that was, something that we managed to get taken care of, just sort of anecdotally to the project, but a good thing probably that it happened for that particular wolf. A little bit about the Denali caribou herd. The preliminary fall herd estimate is 2,215 caribou. And that's down a little bit from just over 2,400 caribou in 2020. The calf survival up to last fall was 11%. Our calf survival typically averages about 25. So calf survival last year was low. For a second year in a row, cow mortality was notably high, with an estimated mortality rate of about 23% for adult females. This is the second highest mortality rate that we've seen for cows. Our average over the life of the study from 1986 to 2016 was 11%. So adult female mortality was high for last year. We suspect that probably had a lot to do with the cold and snow in the winter of 19 and 20. Probably most particularly the heavy snowfall that we got really late in the season in March. You know, it came at a time when those pregnant cows were already at a pretty high nutritional need, and you know, that hinders their movement, requires a lot of energy, makes them more susceptible to prey when we get snow levels like that. Just kind of an aside to the snow that they were dealing with. At headquarters, the amount of snow in 2020 was basically within the normal range. In Kantishna, it was 182% of normal. So the western part of the park definitely had a whole lot more snow than what we would typically see. And that was apparent with what was going on with caribou. Just a little bit about sheep. The only thing that we did last year, you know, COVID has kind of put a little bit of a kink in our style on some of the work that we've been doing. In 2020, we did not do a ground-based survey. Last year, in 2021, we did sort of an abbreviated version of our ground-based survey. And the lamb ewe like ratio was down a bit, 26.7 lambs per 100 ewes. 87 sheep were counted. Again, you know, the fact that this survey was a bit abbreviated from what we typically do, it's not unusual that we didn't see the numbers. But again, the productivity was down some, and we suspect that probably also had to do with that late season snowfall as well. So not a real surprising decrease there. So far as moose go, we have not done any moose surveys recently. We're kind of on hold. Denali is part of the Central Alaska Monitoring Network. We share funding resources with two other parks, and so our typical rotation for moose surveys is every third year because of the three parks in this network. But our biometricians have decided that we're going to put our moose surveys on hold for a little while for them to review the protocol and see if it's actually serving our needs. So we haven't been doing moose surveys for a few years now, but I will say, based on what we saw in the past couple of weeks, Denali around park headquarters and certainly down the hill in the entrance area, we were experiencing conditions much like the rest of the interior. I talked with Tony when all of this was going on, and we were sort of sharing stories about what we were seeing with struggling moose. What we were finding in the headquarters area and the entrance area of the park is that any place that was cleared of snow, moose would move in. And, you know, as you realize, in a national park, even in the dead of winter, even in these conditions, visitors are still coming to the park. And, you know, most of the visitors that come to the park have not got a concept of what a confrontation with a moose might mean. And so we tried a number of mitigation measures to kind of give the moose a little bit of relief and hopefully steer them away from places where we were going to have visitors. And I will say this was the first time we've ever had to try this. You know, we had record-breaking snow levels at park headquarters, over 5 feet of snow in those, 4 days at the end of December. And when I showed up there after all of this was over and they started moving snow, I got to admit I was pretty blown away by what it looked like and the amount of snow that was there. So we started actually plowing areas and then blocking them off with snow berms to keep people out, but allowing the moose to use these areas. The other thing that we did was to punch out holes through some of the berms on the sides of the roads because we were finding that the moose were having a really tough time. You know, people were traveling up and down the road and the moose are in the middle of the road. and they were having a really hard time getting off the road. So the road crew punched out a bunch of holes in the berms, and that really helped a lot. And I will say I was pretty surprised how quickly they dispersed. You know, everybody was asking me, how long are we going to have to do this? How long is everybody going to have to be on alert about moose? And you know, I said, you know, we're just going to have to wait them out. And surprisingly enough, about 5 or 6 days ago, we were starting getting reports that nobody is seeing moose in the headquarters in the entrance area anymore. So I think our efforts have paid off some. We knew that they were going to disperse on their own, but we tried to give them a little bit of help, and I think that really paid off. So that was our story, or what I considered sort of a success story with what was going on with moose as compared to what might be happening in some other locations. The other thing that I'll just mention is about bears, and I would imagine that most of you that pay attention or care about anything that happens in Denali know that as of last August, the park road is closed at about mile 43 because of a landslide. The road is going to be closed at a minimum for the next 2 seasons. You know, it's been in the news. We just got big funding. There's going to be a bridge built to gap this landslide area. And because we're going to have basically half of the park road experiencing a no-traffic condition, we're taking this opportunity because it's something that we've kind of wished for a very long time, and it's finally fallen into our lap, that we have an opportunity to study what's going on with some wildlife when there's no traffic on the road and be able to compare that with a traffic condition. So we are very thick into the planning for a bear study, probably collaring upwards of, we're guessing right now, probably about 20 bears on that section of the road, that there will be no traffic, and studying the movements of those bears while there is no traffic, and then keeping those same bears radio collared when traffic resumes after the bridge is completed. So we're pretty excited about that project and the opportunity to get that done, because it's not something we ever imagined we were going to get an opportunity to do. So I think it'll be really telling in terms of what the effects. You know, lots of folks have done studies on traffic effects and road effects on wildlife, and some of that we can apply here, and a lot of it we cannot. So we'll be able to do something very specific for Denali. So we're really looking forward to that. So I don't want to take any more of your time, so I'll stop there. If anybody has any questions, feel free to ask them now. And if you think of something later on, there's enough folks in that room that can probably tell you how to get a hold of me. It's pretty simple, but I'll quit there.
All right. Anybody got any questions about anything for Clark? I did have a quick question, kind of looking or going back and see the numbers. I was just curious because you were saying that the wolf numbers had been up a bit in the park. Do you think that's contributing to the mortality rate of the caribou that you're seeing as well?
Yeah, you know, what we've learned over the years in looking at that that predator-prey study, you know, basically looking at moose, at caribou and wolves, you know, when the snow conditions are deep, the prey, mainly caribou, moose to some degree, have a much more difficult time getting around than the wolves do. So the wolves do very well, and the caribou don't. So this is pretty typical and fits in with what we have seen with this project since its inception, basically.
Anybody else have any questions? Anybody in the line have any questions? All right. Well, thanks again for the update, and we're going to keep moving on here. And anybody else from the public that may be on the line have any comments that you'd like to bring up at this time. Guess not. All right, we'll move on again to old business. Let's see on the list here of AC actions on proposals 183, 163, and 189. But unfortunately, I don't have those from the old book in front of me. Kyle, I see you. Oh, look at there. You're prepared. Kyle, you're still on the meeting there. I would hope you put that on the agenda for old business. Is there something you wanted to bring up on that?
Oh, yeah. No, I was just looking through your old minutes. And so those proposals that I listed there under old business, those look like three proposals that are in the current packet that are going to be considered. Those are still, I know those rolled over from last year, but I just wanted to make sure before you go into reading through the proposals tonight and recording your actions, just to revisit those, just to either carry those forward, the actions you took last year on those three proposals, or if anything had changed. But those three will be considered at the statewide meeting this March in Fairbanks.
Okay, so I'm assuming this is proposal numbers from the 2022 proposal book and not the 2021. Is that correct?
Yes, it gets a little confusing this year. Typically, that question would make more sense. So the 2020-2021 proposals had carried over, and so there was also then the 2021-2022 supplemental proposals, but those have been kind of combined or married together. And organized into the meetings that they'll be considered for. So when you go to the Board of Game website, you'll be able to kind of see what I'm talking about a little bit more as far as, and it is understandably a bit confusing how 2 years kind of got lumped in together, split up into the different regional meetings. The packets that I in the email, as well as what I think Mark and Tony have four copies of in white binders there for you. So those are going to be all of the statewide proposals that you would have looked at some of them last year, including those three that I mentioned in the old business, as well as all of the new statewide proposals. They're all combined in that folder. They're all in they're all in sequential order. So at the statewide meeting in March, proposals from 2020-21 and 2021-22 are going to be considered.
Okay. Well, we'll probably jump into those then as we start kind of going through the proposals. I have a number of them here already highlighted, I think. Well, one is over. So we'll hold off on, I think, comments and then those things kind of dive into these if that's all right with everybody. Getting a lot of head nods and some hmm-hmms and some thing else, so we're going to roll with this. Anybody else have anything on old business they want to bring up? All right, then we'll go ahead and move on to new business. And I think everybody's eagerly waiting to hear what Carmen has to say, so I'll turn the floor over.
A whole list of things to talk about dating all the way back to May, so we're at now.
All right.
So first thing I'll talk about a little bit is funding surveys that we conduct in May. We do that annually in 2028. And been doing that ever since. Been doing that for a lot of years with the goal of seeing that as the meat population was reduced out there to 20 more acres increase. 20 more acres is a measure of nutritional health in the the healthier that moose is, the more likely it is to lose twins. So we really want to see that population be one that's nutritionally healthy, good feed, and that moose are doing real good because they have 20% of us, and that's what we really want to see in 20. The population was the highest in the moose in the poorest condition out there. We saw the twin rates were less than 10%. So we continue to survey it every year to monitor it. Have some good burns in that country growing up, starting to grow up. Need some burns that are seem to be helping a bit. But this spring, the twin rate was 15% twins. So we're still below the 20%, so we really want to be. At 15%, kind of our guidelines are to keep the population stable and keep the population levels at. It's been holding right around 15-17% the last few years, so it's not terrible, it's decent, but it's not where we'd like it to be yet. Moving on, that was in May. In July, we did sheep surveys in 28. Just a reminder, in 2020, we had one of the lowest counts they'd ever had in the area. So we survey the same area every year. It's kind of Dry Creek, lower Wood River from Kansas Creek north. West Fork of the Little Delta is the area we surveyed. And in 2020, when we surveyed it, that was when the numbers really did drop. We figured there was about a 40% decrease in the population of sheep in there. We counted 385 sheep, 94 rams, 18 legal rams in that area. And when we surveyed it this year, in 2021, July, the numbers were even lower, but not much. Instead of 385, we're down to 362 sheep, 124 rams, and 16 legal. So that, you know, at the peak, there were 600-700 sheep in that area, so we're down quite a bit. About a couple winters. In 28, I'm in a lot of the state right now. This last year, the land to ewe ratio was slightly better than the previous year. We had 15 per 100 in 2020, 15 lambs per 100 ewes. This year it was 19 per 100, so it was up a little bit, but that country, when the going's good, we see 30 to 40 lambs per 100 ewes pretty easily. So they're just tough winners. We kind of substantiated our sheep survey from last year, being slightly lower than the previous year with harvest. This fall to harvest in 20A was 44 lambs. That was down from 2020 with harvest at 63 rams. You guys remember prior to that, the average number of rams taken in 20A was about a 12-year period was 100 rams, back down 60%. So it reflects this area that we know there's not, the sheep numbers are definitely low down out there. So this helps us substantially. We got to October with these caribou comps in the Delta herd out here in 28. This year we comped 1,191 caribou. We had a high bull cow ratio of 44 per 100. That's kind of what we expect because it's a drawing permit. We kind of treat that as a trophy hunt for caribou out there. We had a calf to cow ratio of 18 per 100. It was slightly below what it normally is. Probably explained by the same hard winters like a second. We do think the caribou numbers are pretty good in 20A right now, at least up until this fall. up here, we haven't even attempted to do a unit-wide count because they don't group up some of the other herds out, but we think there's quite a few caribou. Numbers have been coming up here. That may all change now, but so harvest was really good this fall in there for those caribou, and I'll get to the harvest here in a bit, but I'm still seeing lots of large bulls being harvested in my herds. I don't have any of the general season harvest numbers. They seem to be slow getting into the database this year. If we have another meeting this winter, I will have them by then. But I do have harvest from the drawing permits in 2018. I did have the sheep harvest because they're seed. One of the general season moose harvests isn't completely accurate, so I don't want to report it yet. But as far as permits, drawing permits, so all of 20A, there was a harvest of 42 cow moose this year. And the any bull drawing permit, there was 215 any bulls taken. 215 any bulls and 42 cows this fall. And then on top of that, the muzzleloader hunt that occurs in the winter in the Wood River Control Use Area, an additional 20 bulls were harvested in that. Just for some perspective on kind of the area adjacent to you guys, three kind of cow hunt areas, Perry Trail, which consists of three different drawing permits, the Healy Creek, and then the Moose. And in those areas adjacent to Healy, there was only eight cows. So we reduced the number of cow permits in all these real accessible units, close to Healy and the Park Highway a few years back, and concentrated more of the cow harvest in the interior portion of 20A. And so only a total of eight cows were taken in all these adjacent. I'm going to report that. Any bull permit, the any bull permit for the 770 for the Perry Trail Country, there was 35 any bulls taken in there. And then the other any bull permit adjacent to this area, the Yannert, there was 19 any bulls. The DC 827, caribou hunt. So for a lot of years, the average was about 50 caribou taken, 50 bull caribou taken a year out of that. This year, 71 bulls taken out. Really sure the increase. I haven't analyzed it real closely to see why I went up, but I think it certainly could be explained, Mark, and I think that there's more caribou out there than there's been. Hurts kind of drawing a little bit, so anyway.
That's not 150 cows, right?
So for a long, long time, 150 tags, on average, only about half the tags were even used. 75 of 150. And I haven't looked at it to see, but how many were used this year, but 7 to take. Be successful here. So that's pretty much the fall hunting that I have. I don't have the general season moose, but it looks to me like between the any bull permits, cow permits, the muzzleloader hunt for moose, and then I think the harvest for harvest tickets is going to be somewhere around 210, 220. So I think it's going to be real close to about 500 total moose harvested out of 20. About what we've been doing. So the big question now, or the hot topic of the day for us, is the snow, the deep snow, and the ice. that there would be snow. That's even worse than normal. I'll tell you a little bit about what we're seeing around Fairbanks. I appreciate all the reports I've gotten from some of you guys from down here, what you're seeing. Coach sent me some pictures and pretty impressed with the air here after Christmas, how much water was flowing down Dry Creek through the heat of these houses. Almost immediately after the deep snow and rain that happened right around Christmas, all nuisance, injured, dying moose just went off the charts in the Fairbanks office. Mostly what we're seeing at this point is one moose are armoring already. We usually don't see that until February, March. They don't want to leave the roads or the trails or the sidewalks. It just happened almost immediately, and I think it's because it's so tough to walk through. The other thing is the number of calves died. And it just started immediately. Calves just laying down in people's yards and on the side of the road or in the trail and just letting them go die. I did have to go out and shoot. Yeah, probably 10 of them or so, and then just reports of them. So it's affecting the calves almost immediately. All the data says that the adult moose with this level of snow, maybe not like what's happening in Denali Park with the 80 inches. The amount of snow we have isn't as detrimental to the adults, but it's early in the winter. You know, if we get another 2 feet of snow, it might really affect the adults. The other thing is, we're not really sure what this ice crust in the middle is, clearly what's affecting the calves. And I'm not sure in the long term how many adults we're going to lose out of that, or to even speculate. We had an meeting today, in fact, before we came down here with some of the researchers and stuff, to kind of come up with a game plan to, you know, look at and see how widespread this is. And for example, the White Mountains north of Fairbanks has a lot of snow, but didn't get the rain. They don't have the crust mixed in the middle of it. And they often get a fair amount of snow up there in the White Mountains. We don't know, there's a lot of wind that's blown in with these storms too, so up high, is it blowing the hills clean for the sheep? We're not sure yet, so we're making plans to go fly around, do snow samples, check depths, look at sheep country, look at moose country. Got no caterers to spend more funding flying all the animals. We do have radio collars on. See how they do through the winter. We have a bunch of moose collars in 28. We looked at them in October and November. We know which ones had calves. We're going to fly them regularly for the rest of the winter to see how many of them lose calves when, and how many have calves at the end of the spring. We'll also know how many of the adults survive of the collared ones. We can do the same with caribou. We don't have any way to measure the sheep, how the sheep do, until we do our survey next July. So that's kind of what we're seeing now. We're really crossing our fingers we don't get a whole bunch more snow. As far as Mark and I are kind of what we're thinking, you know, we do the antlerless reauthorizations every year with the ACs, and this is kind of our plan for this year. We're going to have all the ACs to support reauthorizing the antlerless hunts. But in 20A, we're not going to issue any permits. 2022 season. So we reauthorize it just so it's still on the books. 2022, we issue zero cow permits. And that's a pain. We're already working with headquarters to return $14,000 to people that applied for them. That's where we're going to go that route. And for 20B, I'm not going to hold the antlerless hunt in the end of that. We are going to continue to have the Fairbanks management area hunts, and that's the bow hunts around town. The reason we're going to have that is because that hunt already, the intention of that hunt is to keep the population right around town down as far as any way or shot because of the kind of. We're going to just continue to have that hunt. That usually equals about 30 tables. That will be taken in that narrow and there's a. So we want to continue to have that because we're going to have some nuisance moose around town. We're going to have them sit with cars and stuff. That will keep them right around town. There's also our Richardson Highway corridor hunt that we've had for a number of years. Quarter mile each side of the Richardson Highway goes through March. It's a muzzleloader or bow hunt for any moose, and it's the same thing. And the moose keep the moose. A lot of moose get hit on the road along there, and by harvesting a few, they always remember a road kills in there. That's an any moose hunt, but it falls under the antlerless harvest, so we continue to have that. And that usually is only about 10 moose. All the big hunts, all the 28 drawing permits, we have one registration. Antlerless hunt, we give out the permits in Manana. We're going to cancel those in 28. There won't be any cow harvest in 28. And there's no cow harvest in Mental Flats. Just those couple of hunts for the lower the roadkill and nuisance. There's lots of discussion on sheep going on, strategies with sheep. A lot of advice from different groups on what the department should do with sheep. We've analyzed quite a bit of data. We've looked at the 20A as one of the best data sets for sheep, over the sheep population, you know, an estimate for number of sheep and then harvest. So, and it's also the only unit that was, has that kind of data set and was full curl from 1991 on, when the last hard winter was. A lot of other units are still 7/8 curl. So, 28 was the first to be full curl. And we have some data that looks at how sheep recover after a hard winter. And that's going to be used, I think, in a lot of places, you know, that data. I don't know exactly what the department's going to do. I pushed on headquarters that all the ADs together that have sheep and discuss what the best strategy is. If you're getting a lot of questions from different user groups on what to do, and I have my thoughts and I'll share them. And if you guys want to hear them and stuff, but definitely being discussed.
What is some of the other groups that you're talking about? The other some of the other ACs, I'm sure.
Yeah, like Resident Hunters of Alaska has been real vocal. Guys have been pretty vocal.
What's kind of been the consensus, I guess, of what's been?
Well, you know, everybody wants a piece of the pie, you know, so each different group has a different idea of what they want. And kind of solicit the right answers from, you know, whoever will give it to them. But it's a little bit political in nature, but, my feeling is the full curl strategy is very conservative, more conservative than anything else we hunt. I don't think changing hunting. The only thing that's going to fix these sheep populations is we need some good weather and good busy years for sheep. And I don't think hunting's going to help. If we close hunting, I mean, what it would do is if we close hunting, there'd be some bigger rams when we open back up. I don't think it's going to change the.
Yeah, when I watched the presentation, was it yesterday? Came out last week. I don't know what it was. I watched Brad's recommendations. You know, he pretty much said that was going to be their stance, was to not do anything. I mean, that just really concerns me, I guess, like the thought of it, because, you know, then he also pulled the populations of sheep and said, well, you know, they'll recover, you know, but the daddy shows like a 20-year recovery. And you have multiple, you know, generations of mature rams coming up during that time. So it's to kind of keep chopping them off before they ever get there.
Our horn data doesn't show they get chopped off of people. One study shows that he is the highest harvest rate. 30% of the rams that are harvested were legal to produce.
Yeah, they're 9-year old.
Yeah,
rams.
Year before, so the, most of those areas are lower than that. 20 is the highest.
But in all the studies through Heimer, pretty much show that those older rams are required to produce a healthier sheep population. I mean, that's the original. Everything I've read about all that they did, and everything I read, like in the Rampages book, takes us all that stuff that's compiled it, and I thought it did a really great job. And I talked to the author about that as well. But the same thing, like the reason that they initially went to that was because there's a population in Alaska, and they attributed the older rams to being able to sustain a more healthy sheep population.
Yeah,
three-quarter girl, right?
Well, some of those drawing permits down there are any ram.
Mm-hmm.
What they did is they went to a full curl instead of the full curl strategy general season to answer the point. That population never grew. Now there's some big rams in there. Limiting hunting didn't grow that population. The TMA is another example. TMA is pretty limited. All that permit. And it's probably going to recover in the same way. It's not going to recover. Good lamb crops. We need big lamb crops.
Yeah, I thought the biologist there in Anchorage, he talked about the Chugiak range and the sheep populations there. And, you know, I thought he had contributed the declining sheep populations to the advancement of vegetation. And,
I mean, there's some change, right?
There's like an almost binaural weather down there, just like we
have. Yeah, they have a
lot of fences down there for sheep anymore. That's what it is, it's weather, you know, and unless you get good weather, we cut way back the number of sheep shot, you know, like this year. What if they come drawing from it? You know, instead of shooting 44 rams, we shot 22 rams. Noah, those 44, based on the data, there's another 80 of them out there that were legal. I'm shooting 30% of them. So, they're still out there breeding.
So, you don't think that would have any sort of effect on the lamb to ewe ratio that you talked about earlier? You said that was on the decline right now?
I can breed a lot of.
So what do you think has been contributing to that, I guess, the lower ratio of lambs to ewes?
I think in 2020, when it was 15 per 100, that was one, the snow level at that year wasn't the last of 2 months. And you dropped them. People are dying.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what some of the other groups are after?
Well, you know, I think for resident hunters of Alaska, they want to come.
I've been hunting down there for 42 years and one night I could sit out on my first professional river in California for 18 different people. All I got out there in the night. No, that's the thing that can't control the weather. We have from government to trust the private individuals who eat up on the predators over that, but I don't know if we're going to do that without, you know, nation legislation. It would be easy to, but another thing that's concerning to me, and we've all talked about this through the emails and stuff, because of the back that DNR keeps issuing a permit to a foreign mining company. He bought them in a lot of sheep country because the sheep were already in the grass state. Helicopter is a terrible for animals. And they believe, you know, the way you can see that they will drop away. And I know Tony is, I think, is about as happy about it as the rest of us. And he and I not looking by contribution or about the new license of the resource. They're founding a Australian mining company over at the time. Everyone should. This is bad protocol. They're supposed to be, you know, cooperating with the Ukrainians. They could screw Tony from that for a few years in a row now.
Yeah,
he's never even had anything to do with the area by all. That's fucking ridiculous. And I don't know if he ever got any satisfaction from him, knowing the DNR that he did.
No, I did draft that letter and I sent it out. I think, you know, I wanted to make sure I had the committee's consensus on it before I sent it out with our stamp on it. And I honestly didn't really get much feedback, so I never had to send that, but I still have a copy of it. But I had it ready to go to send out to Board of Game and the DNR. Well, you know, pretty much saying there needs to be some public comment on it and that they need to be included in department and everything else on those decisions, because it seemed like it was all kind of pushed under the radar. I think they said there was some sort of comment period, you know, but you know, we didn't hear about it. No, I don't think anybody here knew about it. It just kind of got slid under the radar to make happen. It is no joke of a company either. You know, I think that what they could potentially do out there could be very detrimental. Just seeing, once I started looking into that company and seeing what they were doing statewide up on the slope and other areas, and they're a huge corporation. Massive funding behind them, and they could definitely turn into something happening out there in the Wood River area that develops into a, you know, a major mine like Red Dog or Pogo or one of these big mining areas. And they don't take the wildlife into consideration. They're all going to get pushed out. I think it is a major concern, you know, on top of the weather and everything else, you know, that's going on. Undoubtedly, you know, and then what I see happening too with that is it would probably be restricted, similar to like the Pogo, you know, road and stuff like that. They put it in, you know, and they could take the Rush Trail, turn it into a road, then say, okay, well, now you can't use it, or this is now a private road, you know, similar to what they've done over there. But yeah, it is pretty concerning. You know, I still have that letter drafted. something I can still send off, but I wanted to make sure, you know, I felt if I send it out by myself, it's not going to have as much impact as if I send it out as a committee. You know, pretty much seeking more information is really what it was about. I know it's a little off topic, we kind of went down the rabbit hole here, but talking about that, but I don't know if you guys want, I can resend that to you guys, and you can both take a look at it and kind of be aware of it. And if you guys want to.
Put it on a letterhead that says you're a big time liar?
No.
Well,
I mean, yeah. So the same thing, though.
Yeah.
I think part of the problem is you do don't think every mountain range that is set up to that. Put a moratorium on all the areas that could get hit in the areas that touch you for dinner. But I think if you do it, you gotta know the state why. But you explained to me and I forgot. The reason that you don't want to do it is, like, what was the reason? Something about the sex getting put in the door that it just stopped it now, and then they'll use that as a cheat. But they're not supposed to be game managers anyhow, right? They think they are, they're just for land managers, but we're not really left to manage games. I'm just asking who now.
They reduced the number of sheep permits in the TMA this year down to 10. As an objective to wire a certain portion of large land. So they reduced the number of sheep permits and there's everybody jumping on it. You don't have the people jumping on that and using it. Hey, you know, they reduced it. We need to close this, we need to close that.
That is what's concerning, is as soon as you take it away, it seems like you never get it back.
There's never been a drawing permit that's went back to NLC.
Well, in the
I believe Don Levy issued a thing on that, right? He sent a letter out to pretty much the president himself saying they were going to be, you know, they were supposed to have some sort of formal turnover of that waterways, which never came. So he pretty much laid out, these are the steps we're going to be taking to get that from you. That was a pretty good, bold move on his part. Anyway, yeah, it was kind of a weird situation, and not sure how it's going to go forward, you know, with the weather being what it is and how it's going to affect. It might inevitably be that that's when we end up going to statewide, try to keep the populations, because I know the populations seem to be down statewide, which is in all the ranges. I don't think there's really any area that's, like, just booming right now. So even like the eastern brooks is starting to decline from pilots and stuff. I know that hunt that. So it is kind of concerning all around.
Thirteen,
you can get permits, and you can get permits in, what is it?
19.
on the model, right?
Yeah.
They have had some feeling on it, like as with Mark and I were talking about on the way down. I think the time in my mind to do it when you get a good year or two and you get a bunch of good lamb crop. You have a year where it's a pretty good year, you get a big lamb crop, 30, 40 lambs per 100. Then you want to go in and do it the next spring. Protect them. That cohort gets through, and then there's another year, and you go out and do it again and protect them. And I never do it. You wouldn't be able to do it for the whole damn Alaska range. You're all over 20 annually, but you areas where there's higher sheep density.
And what about, the VA discussed all about coyotes, too?
Yeah, that's been talked about. That's just difficult to find them, you know, even aerial.
Yeah, if they're not traveling in packs.
Or to attract them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, going back to that that presentation that Brad's information, I thought that he had said in 28 that the actual coyote predation on sheep was even higher than it was with wolves.
Yeah.
You know, there is a couple, I was kind of looking through here, there is a couple proposals that help with that. Give a little more.
Another one.
Yeah, eagle. That they used to do back in the day. Well, we could probably discuss this one all night, but, you know, I think we should move on. But I think it is something that, you know, just keep our ears open on, I'm sure, you know, hopefully.
I'm hopeful that all the winds and the population's low right now, right? I'm hoping this is a tougher sheep. The extra wind, I mean, there's been a lot of wind that's provided enough zone ranges for. I need half as much winter and half of that as it used to, right? Which happened. So, doubtful but hopeful, I guess.
Well, I guess, too, you know, listening to probably some of the other committees' recommendations, what they have to say, and some of the groups that are out there. I'm sure, like you said, all the different groups will have their own kind of biased opinion, you know, RAC or SPARC or the National or whatever. They're probably going to have a little bit of opposing views, but, you know, hopefully there's some kind of general consensus amongst all of them that you can look through all the politics and come to find. Yeah, it is a good with that.
You might remember when we did the policy report. A year and 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the one thing. You want to remember if you're not having a bunch of people. You're $50 for a sheet. And here's what their excuse is. I go through the end of the country if we live in Alaska all year, I should get a $3 sheet for free. I would get $3 for a sheet that they say you guys would do. That's a box of cartridges. They're going to eliminate
people who are paying the largest majority of the bill will not run through the I was sure they wouldn't even make $100. You heard that $300 they wouldn't even make $100. 200 of the QT checking people, the little $400 trucking poles, carbon-fired trucking poles, the one $4,000 $550,000 paper airplane, they don't want to pay $100. I don't mean that they don't care about the name, so it's their publish.
I can't totally agree with you on all that, because I know a lot of those guys myself, and I know I personally talked to them, and I don't think that's the consensus of every single member of the group, you know, but...
Well, all the members that were there representing them during that...
Yeah, maybe select few, but anyway, is there other questions for Tony on any of the other... information you present us on the caribou or moose or?
So, for years, when the problem was filed,
Alan, I got a question.
Oh, right. One second, Paul John's got the floor. Oh,
okay.
Well, it happened many years,
it's
really
wild,
but
now
our finally struggle.
Do you
think that strategy is working?
Well, I think the response is slower than most people think. It's happening. But I think this is a real good example. I don't want the population lower. So look at these cats in Fairbanks. I mean, what instantly died with that beach? You know, that 20,000 moose out there. That's 5,000 calves out there. The idea is to have a lower population like what we have now. So the survey we did this fall, we did a 20-inch survey this fall, and we came up with an estimate of about 14. Objective is 10 to 15,000 moose, so we're right in a little, it's a little higher than last year, like 12,000 moose. If you have 20,000 moose out there, these would be poor condition calves, and that's why these calves are dying right away, using stuff. They're smaller, skinnier calves. If you had 500-pound calves like they do in Lake Clark, they'd be powered with juice probably better, you know, and a 380-pound idea. Lower number, higher productivity, like cleaning and stuff, and then more robust, healthy calves. And we were going to go out in the spring. Our goal for the spring was to go out and raise some calves, see where they're at that way, but that's going to be stupid. That answer your question?
Yeah. And we'll just we'll see you do a couple of days when we have a total standard to run up against. So we'll kind of see the goal of the strategy
when it. So I looked at the moose numbers from 92. 91, 92, those hard winters. And, that third one kicked the heck out of the sheep here in 28. I'm saying, I mean, that was the last big one that where it dropped like this. And, but there didn't have nothing to do. That population kept climbing. They had been real low in the 70s and 80s and then started climbing up in the 80s, so they were pretty healthy population because they had been there for a while. Didn't even do a blip and just kept on.
My
question, I guess, is you're going to be sort of proactive because of all the snow, not only on sheep, but moose and caribou.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to try to get out and see what's happening, because I know you don't want to have any cow comments. Yeah. I want to keep the season.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at stuff that happened in 1974.
That was the year I was born, Wayne.
Well, okay. The season, boot season, used to run from August 20th to September 20th, one hole. And their next season was November 1st to November 20th, which was the college season. So when we had all the snow and so forth, they shut that college season down.
Yeah.
So you're sort of hoping we get a nice thaw and everything runs away.
But I'm saying we're going to close the cow season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got black collar hunts, and you got permits for the info events and so forth.
Yeah.
And you got a 25-day season. So. Answer my question. Just being proactive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's a guess. I mean, maybe the moose don't get hit that hard. Don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's at that.
Well, I mean, look at the sheep.
Yeah.
I mean, this last spring and Easter time, I'm sure those sheep got hit hard all in line.
Yeah.
Paul's on the line here, and he had a comment or question. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I was, you know, Tony has said that you're going to close the antlerless permits. Was there any thought on reducing any of the any bull permits instead of staying with the numbers that you have been?
So we talked about that a little bit. Our survey, it looks like that we probably have about 30 bulls per 100 cows, which is above our objective of 25 per 100. And I think at this point we'll just keep it as is for the bulls. And if it looked like it was a really disastrous winter, then we could do something by emergency order. But at this point I'm just going to leave the – not going to – suggest doing anything with the bulls until we get at least a better idea of how this winter shakes out in the end.
Okay, I guess leaving that option open for an emergency order, I guess, was part of my question, so I guess you answered it.
It's just an option we can use. If we figured out come springtime, you know, all our collared moose died and carcasses laying all over, we can do something by emergency order, and we can do something with any bull permit. Heck, we can even shorten the season if we needed to, or close, you know, we could, technically we could close it if we had to, but I think at this point it's absolutely the right thing to make the call on no cow hunts to the first thing, and then we'll just go from there if it looks like it's real disastrous on moose.
All right, thanks.
That makes sense, Paul?
Yeah.
All right, any other comments or questions or anything for department? All right, I'm not hearing anything, so we'll move on from here. Thanks for updates. So we're about probably half our time up or so. So if you guys want to take maybe a couple minutes here real quick, just a five-minute break, and then we'll start jumping into some of these proposals.
All right, let's reconvene. We're a little more than 5 minutes. It's 5 minutes and some BS. So you got to have a little time in there for that. Yeah.
This is Kyle. Just wanted to let you know, I think we lost one of the callers that was on there. We do still have Paul Van Dyke and Alex Buteau, and I believe we still have Sam Decker.
All right. Yeah, good than that. All right, next order of business, statewide proposals, and we have until February 18th to get our comments in, so, you know, obviously we're probably not going to get all through these today, but we can meet up again before then. So I will just go ahead and open it up for discussion. We can kind of start at the beginning. Proposals starting at 101, and there is 270 of these things, so we got about 170 of them, but of course we're not going to go through this one. Unless Wayne really wants to. I can see he's chomping at the bit. Yeah, some of these are redundant. I was thinking we had a summary of some of these. Now we have ones from the last minutes here. Let me pull up here. I'm just going to make a note here for myself. Looks like last time we met, you know, we had been over these proposals here, there, in the minutes. We also have already covered 103, 126, 134, 140, and 141. One forty-six, 147, 148, and 153, so I'm seeing from our last. And all right, I'm also showing proposals. It's all spread so far apart, I gotta make sure I'm on the right year. The ones. Getting back into 2020 now, that's all. I think it's been since we met.
look at make sure these are aligning here. Mm-hmm. All I'm really seeing right now, I think we've covered most of these ones here. I think we only had, maybe Kyle, I don't know if you have our records pulled up here to see if we've met. Too many times, but I was recalling we only met twice during the last cycle.
Yeah, this is Kyle. I didn't see anything in the minutes from your meetings last year other than those most recent minutes from January 12th in which you had recorded any actions or decisions or discussion on proposals that are still valid. I may have missed those. I can go back and look, but the only record I saw that could be, in a format that could be submitted to the board were those three proposals that I listed in the old business. If you look in the binders, the four binders I set down, there are, like a simple version or a PDF version of that same meeting minutes template that I sent you by Word document. And I would really recommend that you use that Word document that has all of the proposals broken out, as a place to record whether or not your AC takes action or just, you can write in something like triple action, TANA or whatever, but just as a place to reflect whether it's unanimous support, unanimous opposition, or, if you do a roll call vote or a vote of your members present. That meeting minutes template is really the best sort of tool we've got right now for helping advisory committees get, especially when there's this many proposals, so they can get at least that cursory count of who's in support and who's in opposition, and you can always expand those fields in the Word document and add longer written comments as well.
Okay, yeah, I don't think we have any of those papers in front of us, but I'm looking
You do have an example of that same meeting minutes template. I included it in, it's kind of in the middle of the binder with the proposals themselves, but because there was really an accurate index that showed those statewide proposals that will be considered in March, because we're kind of combining, like I said before, the proposals that you may have looked at last year, as well as all of the about 100 supplemental proposals that came in. So if I forget exactly which page in the doc, I can pull it up, but it should be pretty clear which section of the binder I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm looking back through our meeting minutes from previous cycle, and besides the ones that it looks like you included here that were on our meeting minutes from January 12th, we also had a meeting minutes from December 8th of 2020 where we've already covered a number of these proposals, and these are the ones that I just read off as well, and the notes that are in here go with the proposals seems to align pretty well. So somehow those comments didn't get turned into the board is what it's sounding like to me. But they still need to be, because we've already voted on a lot of these.
Okay, yeah, no, I'm pulling that up now, and I can work with you or Eric after tonight to kind of marry together the those comments or those minutes from that December 8th meeting with the proposals that are currently there. I'm looking now at the same document that I printed out and put in the binders for you. And so it'd be like maybe the 16th page or sort of the double-sided, some 8 pages. And as soon as you get past the introductions and where it kind of gives contact information for board support staff, and this my position is vacant because that was printed before I started, It'll start there. It's a minutes template with comment fields for Board of Games statewide proposals. This is the same format as the Word document that I'd like y'all to kind of put together. And we can take the same minutes from your December 8th meeting last year and include those as well. I think this will just be an easier way to make sure that you've got all of your committee's comments, support, and opposition recorded. One of the things that we're looking for is that actual specific count, so whether it's unanimous, and we know the number of members who were present during the meeting in which that was unanimous support or opposition, or the actual number of you that support or oppose each given. We put that in a database and share that with the board members, and they've been really asking for that. So.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll get with you another time to kind of go over those so you don't have to pass through all of them right now. Anyway, so I guess we still have some of these that we can, you know, go over. I think there has been some that have been introduced since last time we looked at this.
It's going to be everything starting after about proposal 180 or so, I believe, up to 188 or 189 was, or maybe even 190 was where the, there might be a couple more in there that were from, that were out when you last met last year. But starting at proposal 230, change of the definition for full curl horn, that's where we've got about 45-50 supplemental proposals that were put out in that supplemental book. Those are new to your AC. I don't believe you've looked at them. You have no record of your actions on them. Those are going to also be considered at the statewide meeting in March.
All right.
Sorry. James mentioned the full curl proposal. I want to add my list. Bring up.
All right.
I will.
Second. Enough for discussion.
Yes. Regular performance. The gist of it was to change it from full curl to 7/8, as I recall. I think now is probably a terrible time to bring that. By the way, it is. Full curl is pretty easy regulation to follow. Easier than trying to change the 7/8 ramp. I was opposed to it myself. Bring any simplicity to anything to drop it down to 7/8.
I agree, and I think that's one thing that the department has done really well was that field judging guide that they put out. They say that's decreased the illegal, sublegal harvest, like by whatever the percentage it is, but it seemed like it was kind of pretty substantial. But I thought that was really well done there. I thought that was great.
Did you see more sublegal disturbance than normal? Excuse me, I heard that they had it. That was one of the reasons in the proposal was that it would increase some leniency to have it at 7/8, but if people are judging 7/8, you can shoot 240 in turn.
Yeah, I don't seem to have that proposal in this book.
When it was 7/8, you know, the standard way to judge a 7/8 curl, I remember something. Tip of the horns of an eye. Well, so it was just, you know, now people try to. Push it to the eye, you know, if
they're
down below,
yeah,
like it is.
Some of them are back here and some around here. It's going to be easier,
I don't think. I think the nice thing about the full curl, I think the thing I look at for most too is that 360 degree angle more than actually is it coming up past the base horn, so that's so hard to
determine, you know, especially what angle you're at, but if you align the angles of the form of the mature as it comes around, it seems like that is a lot easier to see for me, anyway, personally. You know?
And also, if you drop the 7/8, then you add a majority of another 8/7-year-old in general. 6-year-old four. We actually saw a 4-year-old four curl this year, first one I'd ever seen.
A 4-year-old?
It was shot in tope management area.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, it looked like one of those domestic sheep with horns. Yeah. 27? I think it's 27. And 10 and 3. 10 and change.
I don't have that proposal. I'm trying to, to read through. Do you guys have to have it? Place here to keep us all in line, see. Choose your own adventure.
Oh, it is. This one's your turn. That's
about
that far in.
Yeah. Oh, you're there. All right. Hey, we got it. Thanks. Yeah, changes the definition of full curl horn as follows.
I guess I misspoke about 7/8. 7 years old.
Looking, it's pretty much saying they're looking for a little more margin of error. So if a guy misjudges tiny rings, then, but you know, I can see that keeps going down from there too. When I'm misjudging, it's actually 6, if that was 7. Any thoughts on this, or do you want to raise a vote? Yeah. All right, well, if there's no more discussion on it, we'll bring it to a vote. All in favor of supporting Proposal 230 as written? And all opposed? All
opposed. Opposed.
All right, since unanimous. Okay, we'll move on. So looking through the notes here, what we've already kind of discussed and that, it looks like 158 on we haven't really messed with anything on those pages except for that one we just went over, 230. If there's any other ones in that kind of category anybody wants to bring up. But with the exception of reauthorization of the moose and brown bear exemption fees that we did last year.
One of the last two meetings, there was a proposal with a different one. I read this one and I was in a meeting with traps. Also,
mm-hmm.
Traps.
Yeah.
And they opposed that one.
Yeah, I
earlier.
I think it might have actually highlighted that one. Right here, 134. Looks like we did vote on that one.
This one is. All that long ago they voted.
Mm-hmm. What do you have any proposals to open up? Pretty silent. Get a item in the book.
Chair, I'm speaking from the college down the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to open up your meeting. I'm on the field of the playball grant service. I'm just having to meet by, and I'm interested in these topics as well, and just come through proposals. I might hear mention to one that might be of some interest to folks in the borough, and that is proposal 158.
Isn't that already an option if it's not a salvageable meat? Because you can get permits using as trapping bait.
Yeah.
But it doesn't qualify for dog food?
No, they don't dog game meat for feeding dogs.
Even roadkill?
Yeah.
How many you probably receive all the calls for those, huh?
Yeah.
Or a good portion? How many of them, though, go unused? No, just go unused in general. Like, people don't come to grab them at all. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can change my question to how many, like, actual salvageable moose do you think goes... the way I guess I'm looking at this is, you know, if there's excess of this stuff, it seems a bit of a waste to just leave it rotten on the side of the road if it could be utilized by somebody.
More about
I see what you mean. Somebody goes out and pops one, and they already have a permit that they're feeding the dogs under from one of these, and then.
I think so.
There's also
it's a nasty thing down in the Kenai, in the spray can, and then people take their creatures right to the land, they'll tip them upside down. They're all fish and all made in them.
As for roadkill, take an effort to go out there and get the animal. That's the usual. Take an effort to get that permit to sell that into your trap plant. So I would assume the majority of that animal is used.
Yeah, because this is just as game, whether it be caribou or anything, I guess. You know, really kind of opens it up to what it birds. I don't know if there's game to it, but I mean, because they do allow it for fish, right? You can get a subsistence tag and go down the Indiana. I don't know. A lot of. Yeah, you can use them for bait and you can use them for dog food. A lot of people use. Yeah. So I guess the same kind of argument could be made then too, right? Like, oh, where did the fish come from? They're down illegally, you know, netting them out in the area with a kill net, or they, you know, they actually have a permit or whatever.
And there's a regulation rule. You're not allowed to use game meat. Big time dog mushers all have a meat grinder and sausage maker, and you know, do check them once they got in their bag. You will need jump. I don't know. I mean, been that way for years and years, so.
For the use in trapping with roadkill, does it have to be unsalvageable or can it be any carcass? So those that get ran over and really mangled get thrown into that category.
If I show up and I say, I salvage this and feed my family and my kids. That's how I deem it fit. If you would know better, but the starving moose out there, like the yearlings that die, would I eat that skin, bones, throw the death to my family? Is it healthy? Or is it going to make me sick? Probably not. There's some chemical going on in your body that they're dying from. I guess I'm not a biologist, but there's something going on that they die from. To my family. We're going to take that liability, so we say it's not fit for human consumption at some point.
Some of it's just the number of days it's been laying on the side of the road.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you come into the woods and you see an animal that's laying there, legally you can't take that, that doesn't count. You have to stay there, you need to take care of that animal itself. Circle of life, when it's physically getting hit by a car, plus whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, you had a comment you wanted to make about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I harvested a number. I'm on the North Shore. I harvested and maybe as the law is currently, I have provided an animal being to local dog watchers, which would allow that to happen legally. Apparently,
there's nothing on the books. You could be elected as a roadkill participant, show up and say, I don't want any of this animal. You could let that thing spoil. You would not be on the hook for it because there's no long way and there's no failed dollars on the road children.
Well, once you actually harvest it and it's out of the field, right, doesn't it then legally become your, what's the term I'm looking for, possession, private property, not private property, and you can pretty much do what you want with it at that point? Wasn't that the issue we ran into? Yeah, that was an issue we ran into before out of Cantwell.
School rules, trapping big permit.
Yeah.
I'd be in favor of supporting it.
You want to bring it up for a vote?
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll second it. Hold on. I think it is. I know there's a little gray over there, but I honestly don't see nothing wrong with it myself. Especially if there's an abundance and. Yeah, to get shot down, we would know. All right, well.
I write in my notes that you'll support getting loose the dogs.
Hey, we haven't voted on that yet. Watch it. this isn't just moose, right? Because this is a staying game. And actually, you know what, the way it words it, it sounds like, the state would have to issue a permit for it. Oh, you still couldn't bring it sound like Claire, but even if this goes through, it doesn't sound like you could, unless you got a permit from Tony, you give your scraps to dogs if this would go through. Yeah, let's bring it to a vote, unless anyone else has any more discussion on it.
Yeah, can you guys hear me? This is Alex.
Yeah, go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, so I've worked for a fair number of dog mushers over the years and know the community pretty well. I really don't think that it doesn't strike me as something that would be abused right off the bat. And I do think that it would benefit a whole bunch of people. So I certainly am in support of it.
All right, well, if there's no other discussion, I can bring it to a vote. So all in favor of supporting the proposal, yay.
It's a port.
Is that you or what?
Yeah, it's port.
Like, sounds like Paul as well.
Yep.
Okay. All opposed to Proposal 158. Got one. All right. Move on. Thanks, Clay, for bringing that up. It doesn't look like we discussed this before. This one, did you look into this one here? I did. Sorry. It looks like we didn't cover it.
I don't think that's going.
I don't think so either. That's a waste of time.
It sucks, but it does.
I guess we'll find a few of these. I did want to look at this one here, 235. This one? Coyotes?
No, they referenced that. Coyotes would fall into that as well.
Yeah. All right, there's that. Okay, I'm going to bring that one up. John took off in a second, looks like. Step back for a minute. 235. Allow the use of artificial light while hunting small game animals at no close seasons and no bag limits.
That wouldn't fall into that because it's...
Yeah, just,
oh. That was on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, that won't work for that one.
Can you get unclassified games?
Oh, yeah. The spotlight from trees. You know, I was really trying to, yeah. Target the coyotes there.
With the shorts.
Well, that was basically small. That's what we got left.
More riders, you said. We could hold 248. Although, transfer draw permits to not only use. The population of farmers across America. Numbers are down. It's a trend.
non-resident youth as well as resident youth, as long as the appropriate drop permits or harvest walking tags, or not harvest, but walking tags are for the appropriate animal, I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be an advantage to hunting as a whole. Drop permit would have already been issued, so it's not necessarily it would make any difference on the allocation of whether it be resident or non-resident who receives the permit. A resident hunter could have the permit and allow a non-resident youth hunter to hunt on their behalf. I think as long as the appropriate walking tag is applied, I think that would be good. Right now, the resident youth have that opportunity, but non-resident youth are excluded.
Is that the
total amount of transport
from resident to non-resident?
It reads kind of like vice versa. It could be non-resident to non-resident. So I guess that was the interpretation. I know the guy that put this one in, and that was his intention, was to have it so he could go non-resident to non-resident or from resident to non-resident. Include non-resident youth. The intent was not to avoid a lot of things, but allow youth an opportunity to. Who would have to be related? It could be any non-resident youth. As long as they bought a walkie tag to put on it. I don't think he was trying to avoid that. But if I had a niece or nephew from Minnesota that had a caribou permit for unit 20, draw permit, and then I could allow them to harvest on my behalf. Yeah. It's not cheating another non-resident hunter out of it, or another. It's not cheating another resident hunter out of a permit because I've already been awarded it.
Right.
But it would allow a kid to hunt my behalf of my choosing, which I can take my kid and have him hunt. As long as he has a hunter's education, that's the only hoop that he would have to jump through.
Right.
I can take my kid and get hunt on my behalf on my draw permit. Unit 13 has a youth dropper.
I'm
for sure they can.
Yeah.
You just can't transfer a drop permit over.
How does this work though with some of the, the drop hunts though, where it might be limited? There's an allocation there. Somebody has like a bunch of their relatives that can get the resident tank to start applying for it until one of them gets it. They don't have to have anybody with them. It's just their own tag and they just transfer it over to them. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's You can't transfer. You would have to be accompanied by the permit holder, so you're not giving it away.
Doesn't this say this is all non-resident youth terms became on behalf of an adult criminal, and then it goes down here to say became permit holders for hunters age 10 older allowed their own became permit and age 10 their own permits. Adult supervision is not a requirement for hunters with their own permits, like, except their youth hunts. So if it's a youth hunt like the one in Delta,
that's a kid over 10 years old that has their own hunt. They're only dropping them. As long as they have hunter's education, you can let a 10-year-old kid on it.
Yeah.
So, drop permit, maybe I should reread it, but it's my interpretation that if I have a 28 caribou and I want to take my kid, and he has a hunter's education, he's over 12.
He can
hunt on my tag, but I have to accompany
him. If you transfer it.
No, it's not really a transfer. He can just be there to squeeze the trigger. There's no
paper. If you're under 18, if you're between 18 and 10, you have your Hunter's Ed card, you don't necessarily have to have an adult with you, right? So somebody could transfer the resident drawing tag to a non-resident that's...
I don't think you transfer, they can shoot them.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works. I guess my only concern is the whole thing.
He's probably got all the answers.
You got all the answers? He's smiling? You know that, Tony? So, we're talking about this proposal here for transferring a non-resident private on behalf of adult permit holders.
Right. Resident hunters age 10 to 17 who have successfully completed basic hunter education are allowed to hunt on behalf of an adult permit holder under direct immediate supervision of that adult. Adult permit holder must be a licensed hunter 18 or older and is responsible for ensuring all legal requirements are met. Modify a harvest permit. That's whether it's written properly or not, that was the intent of the proposal, were to allow not only residents to use under the direct public drop permit holder. Whether that drop permit holder be a resident or non resident, I think is irrelevant. The only stipulation is that the adult permit holder must be a licensed hunter 18 or older. It doesn't say that the permit holder has to be a resident or non-resident. The adult 18 or older. The only thing he's asking for is that non-resident youth be included in that exemption.
If it's a non-resident, it has to be.
For sheep. Brown bear. Let's say for a moose.
For a big game, they have to have. For a moose, they would. So here's where the
moose is. So this is a. This is a. For you. This isn't specifically for you. This is for any other
permit.
Or muzzle or moose. That's not you.
You're not allowed those first 5 days.
Anybody want to test this one? You guys want a second to bring it up for a vote?
70.
That's kind of where I'm at with building for this.
As long as there's not residents there, they don't have to see a problem.
All the motor from
it. There's no money
to take to that. So, right, not have the same pool.
Yeah.
770, or unit 13 turbo permits, drop permits, those are all resident owned. I guess they do have, there is non resident drop permit status as well, or maybe not just drop them. That's the same. Anybody want to second it for a vote?
I'll second.
That was Paul. All right, well, you guys have any more discussion on it? Has everybody kind of made their opinion? All right, well, we got a second on it, and if there's no more discussion, we'll bring it to a vote for...
Hey, I got a question real quick. Is it a direct transfer, or it's not a transfer? And is this the situation where you can take the kid on the hunt, and if they don't shoot an animal, then the person who has the tag is still able to go hunting? Or is that just flexible?
That would be the case. There's no formal paperwork where you actually transfer the permit over. It just allows a youth child.
This is under the age of 10.
Between the ages of 10 and 17.
10 and 17, okay. Cool.
The adult permit holder can shoot the animal while they're under supervision of that adult.
Copy.
Yeah, I guess if they would, there's no, they don't possess that permit. The youth hunter doesn't possess that. They're able to carry the gun and shoot it.
Kind of like a proxy.
Well, not really, because a proxy, you take that person's permit and hunt on their behalf without their supervision.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you're explaining that you're not transferring the permit, you're just letting the youth shoot it for you. Isn't that what you're saying?
It would be no different than if I took my 7-year-old kid hunting and I let him shoot my moose.
Yeah, exactly.
Watching them. Same thing. Other than there's an age requirement here between these ages of 10 and 17, and they have to have hunter's education.
The whole
thing is kind of a big can of worms, whether the kid has to have hunter's education or not. But I'm getting off track a little bit. But
that's already, I mean, all that's in place. The difference is that this one would allow it for non-residents as well.
Yeah. The system's already there. It just excludes non-resident hunters the way it's written currently.
More discussion on this? We're ready for a vote.
So this is... and this is for draw tags as well. Anything.
What it looks like to me.
Okay.
All right. We beat it to death. So Let's go ahead and bring it to a vote then. So all in favor of supporting proposal 248 as read.
I support.
All support. All right. All opposed to 248. All right. I know there's still a few more of these in here, as well as the station ones as well that we need to cover. Obviously, we need to have another meeting because we do need to get through elections. So maybe we'll wrap things up early and give everybody time to kind of digest the last few of these that we should look up. We already took care of that one last year. Yeah, we've. Yeah,
we voted on that one. I swear.
Obsolete. All right, yeah, well, everybody's in agreement. I think we really don't have a whole bunch of these to go through that we haven't already covered before, so I mean, we do need to have.
I need to print the minutes off.
I think what I'll do is maybe I can. Yeah.
I think we've missed the comment deadline. The only thing that's going to be relevant is the statewide regulation. Some of those we touched on in our last winter's meeting.
I think what would be easiest is that I'll get with Kyle. And we'll go back and make sure we get those last meeting notes. And then maybe for meeting notes for today, we can list on there all the proposals that we've already covered because that's standing out. It is kind of confusing. We can add the ones that we discussed today onto that list. And plan on kind of covering those and then the remaining proposals and then... also need your Kyle's kind of touch base on where we're at with elections as well and whose seats are up and who we should be voting on and get that information out as well. So we're just kind of getting back in the groove after like 2 years of not seeing each other. So if everybody's in agreement with that, we can.
Alan, this is Kyle here. I'm listening in and trying to kind of preempt some of the discussion that will need to happen again. So, and just to remind members that elections will need a minimum of a 2-week notice posted out. So we need to organize that and need to get materials from folks for that. There's definitely some, it's worth kind of figuring out what the way you want to work with your election this year. Board support's been pretty open and flexible in terms of, we're not asking folks to, we recognize that the pandemic has really disrupted a lot of things. And so, and I apologize, my dog's asking me to let her outside as soon as I took the microphone off mute. But as far as members that are going to be needing to look at re-election, it's pretty much everyone with the exception of Paul Nyberg, John and Koch, and Jeremy Wolf. Those are the only members who don't have elections coming up, either that they would expire this coming summer or have already expired. So whether you want to try and approach this as having all of those seats on a single ballot, or if you want to stagger that based on kind of hold two different elections between now and next fall, there's a lot of different options we can talk through further. I also heard someone asking about the comment deadline for the Central and Southwest meeting that begins on Friday. And we have two different comment processes. The on-time comments are what we're trying to get ahead of for the statewide meeting. Those are always due 2 weeks before the meeting. But you can continue to submit written comments if your advisory committee wants to, especially want to take, discuss one of the proposals or more that are going to be taken up this coming week at the Wasilla Board of Game meeting. It's not too late to submit those comments as a record copy. Those can be accepted up until the day of deliberation at the meeting. So even after the meeting begins on Friday, you could submit those comments.
All right. As far as elections go, I don't see why we don't just do them all at once. Anybody thinks otherwise? It seems like you get good notice on it, but in this number of years now, it kind of seems like it's always the same.
One of the reasons I was sorry to speak over you. One of the reasons I was just mentioning that one of the options is to kind of stagger your elections. You could hold community-specific elections, so you could have, because you do have several designated seats for Healy, several designated seats for Clear, so you could hold like a Healy election and a Clear election, but by all means, you certainly can have all of the expired or soon to be expiring seats could be that could be handled in one election meeting. It's really up to the discretion of you as the chair and the full advisory committee as a whole.
No, that makes sense, too, to have elections for the seats in the community that they're in. Any thoughts? Anybody? So that would mean, let's do them.
I don't mind getting to go to the
It doesn't have to be. Typically we stagger meetings between the communities. We'd have to find a place, I think, in Anderson to even do that now. I don't even know if the Lions Club is even functioning anymore. I think the Clear Sky get a little rowdy. The Rochester thing anymore, that's been taken over by the miners at Gold King, so you know what, there's not a lot of options there besides maybe the school. I'd love just to do another one here in Healy at the community center. That's all right with everybody. The Urban Hall. Well, let's just plan on that. We'll just plan on doing elections here at the next meeting. And like I said, Kyle, I'll just get with you, and we can go over some of these previous proposals that we've already gone through and get those out in the next minute so everybody's aware of kind of where we're at. And we'll get elections, get that kind of straightened out, who's up for elections and whatnot, and get that all out in the email.
That sounds good, Alan.
Great. All right. Well, we'll select the next meeting date then, since we're here. We got till the 19th to get comments in, so we probably won't be like How about the 16th of February? It's about a month from now. Anybody see any problems with that? Yeah, out of town?
Works for me.
Well. Night? A little better?
I'm going to be around. Following reports down for everybody else who has just heard.
Anybody got any problems with the night? So?
Works for me.
Okay, let's do that. We'll shoot for the night then, and that gives us enough time to publicly announce the elections as well. And with that, say we, I guess, favor? Okay. All right. Well, everybody that's on the phone call, we're adjourning, but yeah, thanks for calling in, and we'll be in touch.
Nice job, everybody.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
They are, because they've got like two different years of meetings and they're backed up, I think that's why.